Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said Tuesday would be the most intense day of the United States' war on Iran, just a day after President Trump sent mixed signals on when the war might end. How are local Iranian Americans feeling about all this? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview are Shada Soleimani, an artist who grew up in Cincinnati whose parents escaped imprisonment in Iran, and Reza Mehr, a Cincinnati resident born and raised in Iran. Thank you both for being here today.
Of course. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Reza, what was your first reaction when you heard about the U.S. and Israeli strikes in Iran?
To be honest, we were expected that. It wasn't abrupt. It wasn't a surprise. Of course, the fact that they target Iran's supreme leader, that was a surprise. That was a pleasant surprise, actually. But the overall thing was not a surprise. We were kind of waiting for it.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Shada? What was your first reaction?
It was just a matter of when. It wasn't a matter of if. You know, I had just visited my parents in Albuquerque and we were sitting down and watching TV when my Baba was like, you know, checking in and saying, has it happened yet? Has it happened yet? No one has ever really been sure what to expect from this type of situation.
Yeah.
Shada, what were your thoughts about the death of the supreme leader?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, honestly, I wish that he had been brought to criminal court so he could have actually been served justice for all of those that he'd murdered. There's not often times in this world that I celebrate death, but I'm very glad that the butcher mullah is gone. But now, you know, it seems that there is just this veil of that was just an excuse to start a war in the country.
I agree with Shada completely. Like, I wish we could have that supreme leader basically take him to the court. And I wish he could answer to all the murder, all the misjustice that he, everything that he did to Iran, to my family, to her family, to everybody's family. But, you know, overall, I'm a very pragmatic person. I'm like, him being dead is better than him being alive. I wish we could get him alive and we could take him to court. But now that we couldn't, I'm happy with his death.
And Reza, you lived under that supreme
28
leader.
Years. Yeah, 28 years.
Yeah. What was your experience like?
If I may, I know that you ask about my experience, but if I may, let me quote from my mom.
Please.
Not this round of protest, the round of protest before this, 2023, Woman Life Freedom. I remember the internet was shut off for, I think, 2 weeks or so. Please don't quote me on that. I think a week or two. And then when the internet came back, when I called my mom, the very first sentence that she said, she was like, Reza, I was suffocating. And I think that was really how it was living under that regime. For 28 years, it feels like a slow suffocation, to be honest. The oppression that you see everywhere, especially oppression of women, oppression of like minorities. Like, obviously, I'm a man. I'm a majority in that society. So I can understand how it feels like to be a woman. I can understand how it feels, or I can only guess how it feels like to be a woman in that society, how it feels to be a minority. So this is why I'm happy with his death.
Shada, do you support the action the U.S. and Israel are taking right now?
I vehemently oppose this, I think, this is a reminder to me. Mm-hmm. I am a child that grew up post 9/11 in Ohio, which was an extremely racist place to grow up as a Middle Eastern child. America is not going to save Iran. While I'm extremely happy that the butcher mullah is gone, his son is now in power. You know, I am not happy that hundreds of schoolgirls have been bombed. War always causes civilian deaths. There is no need, with the military technology that we have now, there is no need to put civilians through this type of action. If they wanted to take out the supreme leader for the people, which is what they should have done, that's where it should have ended. But now, you know, we're seeing talk about oil, nuclear reserves, watching CNN, which, you know, is not exactly the most, it's progressive for some people, but it's not the most progressive. There's been no talk about civilian deaths. They're just talking about the state of hormones being, you know, shut down. They're talking about the cost of oil going up. What about the cost of the lives? Lives lost and still internet being cut off, waiting for responses from family, you know, seeing a WhatsApp message with one check mark, but not both. Has it even been delivered? Will it ever be read?
Reza, what are your thoughts on this war?
You know, what I would like to do first is to give your audiences a context. The context that I would like to frame everything that at least I am going to say in this conversation with that context. And the context is nobody likes war. War is not good, for sure. I think war exists because it's a necessary evil. You know, as an Iranian American, I watched my homeland suffer under this regime. This is not just an authoritarian regime. This is really an oppression machine that kills tens of thousands of people just in crackdowns alone. So now, how I would like to use that context to say, I understand what she says and I really feel her argument. I understand. But at the same time, I think there was just no other solution. And I have my argument for why there was no other solution, but I'm going to let you, direct the conversation.
Go ahead.
I have three arguments. The argument number one is the peaceful change has been tried and crushed nearly every time that we tried it. Let me give you just two examples. 2009, silent protest or green movement protest. That was the very last protest that I was involved with. When I was in Iran, I was there and I actually attended that protest. I am not exaggerating. Millions of Iranians, we were in the street and no one was saying any word because that was the point. We wanted to protest in a most progressive, in a most civilized way possible. And that's why we call it silent protest. But that protest basically met with arrest, torture, sham trials. I apologize for using even that term, rape, lots of rape in prison and killing, lots of killing. Let's fast forward. I'm jumping from so many other things that happened, but let's jump forward to January 2026, a protest that basically sparked by economy collapse and huge, huge corruption from the government. But then immediately that protest became the bloodiest protest ever, at least in Iranian history. The government itself says 3,000 deaths. So many people are estimating between 6,000 to even 30,000 deaths only in 2 days, only in 2 days. So we can argue about numbers, obviously, because the government is basically shutting down every way that we could possibly check the numbers. But let's even go with the number that government says, 3,000 deaths. That's horrifying. That's horrifying. And so I guess my point is Iranian people have tried peaceful protest, have tried reform. It just didn't work. Mm-hmm. And I think the war can possibly level the ground. So for us versus the government, I have two more arguments, but I'm going to let you, direct me if you want me to go ahead or you want to talk to.
Well, Reza, I want to follow up on something Shada said, though, too, that I think the point that I heard her make earlier was if the goal was to get rid of the supreme leader, why not have that surgical strike instead of all these airstrikes that are causing civilian casualties and killing children and people who have nothing to do with the regime?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a fantastic observation. But I think we can see the answer on our TV. We can see the answer on real life of Iran. So if the argument was, let's kill supreme leader and everything is going to be solved, or the regime is going to collapse, we killed the supreme leader, but the regime didn't collapse. But, you know, that was the claim that Shada made. So obviously, let's see what she says about
it. Yeah. What do you think, Shada?
Well, the regime hasn't collapsed. His son is in power. And so that means if they want to take him out, they're going to have to do more bombings or create more bombings. We're looking at Gaza as this blueprint. We're looking at Iraq, the 2004 invasion, Afghanistan. Every time there has been U.S. interference, imperialism really in any way, in the history of OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, established at the Baghdad Conference, Iran is one of five founding members. Every time there has been U.S. intervention in the greater Middle East and North African area, it has been to gain control of something. It has never, ever been for the actual freedom of the people. And I agree with Reza. I mean, you know, I've watched and my parents have watched and all of my family, besides my mama and baba there in Iran, we have heard of the brutality. We've seen it. And of course, American news doesn't cover half of what's happening. The streets were covered in blood in January, and we were asking for intervention, for the United Nations to intervene. And of course, I think many of us did expect war. But at this point, I think a lot of Iranians, there is this division of people are like, okay, well, it's going to be better. And I hope that they are right, but it is hard to imagine that, you know, black rain falling from the sky, children being bombed, untargeted missiles dropping, flattening. I mean, if this is not the cost, and in which cases have we ever seen a war like this bring freedom or peace? There's really no historical precedent that I can see that is going to bring me relief.
I want to talk to both of you about what you're facing right now in terms of trying to get in touch with family who is mm-hmm. still in Iran. But Reza, mm-hmm. first, you said you had some other points you'd like to make about the conflict. Yeah. I want to give you that opportunity.
Yeah, sure. This war, as bad as it is, basically preventing a devastating civil war. January 2026 protest wasn't about politics, wasn't about opinion. It was about economy, Iranian economy that was basically on a free fall. And when the economy is falling, no matter what you do, without any intervention, I mean, external intervention like war, there is going to be another uprising. And the uprising are going to be inevitable. You cannot just kill people and force them to stay home when they don't have anything to eat. So there is going to be another uprising very soon. We are not talking about 6 years from now. We are talking about 6 months from now. And since people saw what happened in January and how brutal the regime was, people know that regime is going to come to kill. And therefore, people will also come to kill. Now, take that as a background and add disaffected youth, disaffected ethnic minorities, and even disaffected security forces. So this is basically a recipe for Syria 2.0. So I believe, as horrible, as bad as this war is, as Shada beautifully put, I think this war is kind of preventing a civil war. Again, Shada mentioned that children's school, which was devastating for everybody, no question about that. And so many other casualties, even casualties from the regime itself, they are still Iranians. They are still our blood, they are our people, basically, and they are human beings. But we need to accept the fact that, surprisingly, this war has lower casualties compared to the alternative. And I am horribly sorry that I am making this comparison. In January 2026, again, the very last protest saw 30,000 deaths in just 2 days. That's very important context, only 2 days. And in contrast, this war reported only 1,300 deaths, mostly military. Again, they are still human beings. Every one death is a disaster. But this regime is so brutal, so hard in making any change. It's so brutal that makes a war a good-looking deal. Casualties definitely will rise as war escalates, for sure. But remember, people do not want this regime. Economy is collapsing. And Donald Trump, like him or not, signaled that this war could end at any moment by unconditional surrender from the regime. But the regime doesn't want to do that. So again, compared to if no war, another another protest wave could kill tens of thousands more from this regime. So I think the real question is, which one do we want? We want United States surgical, targeted strikes with some mistakes that are horrible, or we want just mass shooting of Iranians by the regime? Which one do we want?
Shada, Reza just mentioned that President Trump has signaled that this war could be over quickly. He's sometimes said the war will be over quickly.
When he changes his mind.
Yes.
Famously.
Yeah. What do you think about that? I mean, President Bush said the same of Iraq, and that war lasted
Operation
years
Iraqi Freedom. And
Even Vladimir Putin. Yeah, I apologize.
No, it's fine. I mean, like, I don't think anyone is truly free. And it's not, you know, like, while we would like to make people feel free, or America wants to create freedom, it has never, ever, ever done that. Do I believe Trump? Absolutely not. There's no way that I can believe that man. Do I believe that he cares about freedom for the Iranian people? He doesn't even care about freedom for American people. So why would I believe that he would care about Iranian people? This is all war propaganda. He wants access to something. Israel wants access to something. And we've seen this happen before. Now, again, am I happy that, you know, the regime is starting to be toppled, that the supreme leader was taken out? Absolutely, I'm happy. I mean, that man, oftentimes I don't say people deserve death, but that man did. But at what cost? And I will continue to say this. I don't trust that, you know, the U.S. government is in this to create freedom. We have had many projects in which we could look at to see if freedom has been created, and nothing has been created except for destruction, for power vacuums, for instability. You could say the same with Libya and Gaddafi, Iraqi freedom, Afghanistan. I could go on and on. Syria, Lebanon, like, what is going to happen to Iran is my biggest worry.
Can I have a very quick reaction to what she said? First of all, I think Shada is 100% okay, with 100% right with everything that she said. And also, I understand the discomfort, anxiety that, you know, when another country is basically bombing your regime. But what she says is basically, I don't want to use a talking point. It's basically the discourse of change must come from within. That's basically what she says. And again, I 100% agree with her.
But it can't if the regime suppresses it. I understand that.
Shada, you said what I want to say. Exactly. Unfortunately, the regime doesn't let us do that. And my only hope is this war somehow, magically, maybe because Iranian people are very united people, maybe because we have united opposition now, maybe morale in Iran, even under the bombing of United States, morale of Iranian people is very high. Maybe our culture, maybe our history somehow create a different outcome. Overall, I think this war levels the playground, hopefully.
We're talking in this recorded interview with Iranian Americans about the war in Iran, their fears and hopes for the future. Shada, we referenced this briefly, but your parents had to flee Iran after spending time in prison. Talk to us just a little bit about their story, about the family you still have there, and whether you've been able to talk with relatives in Iran.
I think this is an important bit of history that a lot of Americans don't understand about Iran, especially because people are looking at Pahlavi right now and, you know, wanting a monarch to come back into power. If you look at the history of Iran, 1952, Mossadegh was democratically elected, toppled in a CIA coup d'etat. The Shah was instilled by, you know, both the British government and the U.S. to be friendly to the West. And so many people, you know, especially when they're looking at the restrictions on women in Iran, they say, oh my gosh, the Shah, it allowed women to not wear a hijab. There was freedom. And while there were those freedoms, there was extreme lack of freedom of speech. People were being executed. People were being killed. So when the 1979 revolution happened, it originally was against the Shah's dictatorship that it had become. And my parents were opposed to the Shah, and that's when they originally began becoming politically active. But when the Shah was, you know, overturned, when he fell and the Ayatollah came into power, no one knew, you know, what was going to happen. They didn't know that the Ayatollah was going to come in at all, or that if they did know that he was going to come in, a lot of people didn't know what to expect. And when he came in, it was even more brutal than the Shah's regime. My parents were imprisoned, my mother in solitary confinement under the Ayatollah's government. So my parents were not only opposed to the Shah, they were opposed to the Ayatollah. And that is a very important distinction to make, because there was one that was evil and then there was one that was even more evil. Eventually, my father fled. He escaped over the mountains on horseback, a three-week journey with smugglers that took him across the border. My mom, when she tried to escape, was caught at the border. She's put into solitary confinement for almost a year, separated from my sister, who was a small child. As a child, I grew up with these stories. I listened to my mom talk about what her solitary confinement cell looked like. I listened to my father talk about seeing his friends hanged and the looks on their faces, because the gallows-style executions, they actually don't put bags over their heads. The, you know, Ayatollah's regime has made people feel scared and brutalized them into suppression by these fear tactics for so long. You know, I think the original thing to remember is that there is a huge, huge history of U.S. interventionism. There is a history of dictatorship. Do I feel hope? I can't say that I do. I want to. My family there, they're scared. We have heard so far in the protests that happened in January, two family members were killed by the Iranian regime. And that is just two of them. One of both very young, one who actually had two children, was shot in front of his children by a sniper. Mm. These are real stories. Of course, the government is awful. I have no words. Thankfully, from these bombings, no one has, you know, been hurt yet. But the city, you know, like we just heard from our aunt and uncle, the city is flattened in so many places. And if we're talking about the collapse of infrastructure, we're looking at a country that has like no economic stability. People don't have money. How are we going to rebuild? Who's going to help? Is the United States going to come in and provide money for rebuilding after they've bombed us?
Shada, I'm so sorry about the family members that you've lost.
Yeah, absolutely.
Reza, how have you been able to contact the family that you, because you still have a lot of family in
Everybody
Iran.
Is there. Everybody are there, yeah. So specifically to contact you to my parents, and then for the second part, I would like to talk about or respond to what Sheda Jun said. First of all, the internet is completely shut off. There is no FaceTime call. There is no, which was the primary way that I was talking to my parents. Even the phone line, SMS lines are cut off. So the only way that we can talk to our parents is if they call us over the like a traditional phone call. And the phone call always drops after maybe like 1 minute. If I may, let me very quickly react to what Sheda Jun said. When she talks about infrastructure, which again, I agree, like what she says is a fact. The infrastructure is getting destroyed. Like she mentioned something a moment ago, a black rain, just for audiences, if they don't know what does she mean, means a couple of days ago, Israeli basically bombed oil reserves in cities like Tehran. I think Shiraz, I'm not sure, but a couple of cities. And obviously a oil reserve, when you bomb it, there is going to be a huge pollution and obviously the fire and all. And when rain comes back, the rain is black. So this is what she meant by black rain, which is like kind of like apocalyptic. It's scary. But when she talks about infrastructure, I agree with her. But at the same time, I just want to remind you something. A couple of years ago, I don't exactly remember what was in 8 January 8, 2020. Iran had another problem with United States. That was exactly the day or a couple of days after United States killed Soleimani, the general.
People, you would be surprised, people don't know.
So Iran basically shot down a civilian airplane. It's famous as a Ukrainian flight, or the number was 752, the flight number 752. They shot down Iranian civilian airplane full of Iranian kids going to Canada to study. I believe the real infrastructure of any country is their own people. And this regime is killing its own people. We can fix oil refinery. We can fix buildings. We can fix road. It needs money for sure. That Sheda John mentioned that. And it's going to be difficult. No question about that. But the real infrastructure are people. And this regime is killing its own people in a rapid way. So...
Well, I have been talking with Sheda Soleimani, an artist who grew up in Cincinnati, whose parents escaped imprisonment in Iran, and Reza Mehr, a Cincinnati resident who was born and raised in Iran. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Of course. Thank you.
Thanks for speaking.
Up next, ethics training in the workplace. This is Cincinnati Edition.